from ABC News Radio, KMET 1490 in Southern California. This is Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with your host, Tyler Jorgensen.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you all out to Biz Ninja Radio. We're going to talk entrepreneurship today with the one and only Mike Caldwell. This is your host, Tyler Jorgensen, and we're going to talk. We're going to have some fun, and we're going to learn about funnels and strategy and what Mike does. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tyler. This is terrific.
So you've been an entrepreneur since you were born, right?
No, I've been an entrepreneur legitimately since 2001.
Okay, what was your first big jump from? Well, first of all, I want to let's address your title, the marketing medic, right? Yeah. So, give me your background a little bit, and then what you made your first jump into entrepreneurship.
I'm glad you said jump, because yes, That's what happened. I don't know if you know the story or not.
I'm excited to learn it.
Yeah, this is a true story. So I was working as a helicopter paramedic in Ottawa. So I was flying around. I was a superhero. I was like up in the sky, coming down, saving lives. Right.
Right.
It was really cool. But I had two problems with it. One, I hate working nights. I'm not a night person. So for me to be up past 11 p.m. or midnight at the worst, my body just hurts so much. Like physically, I'm not a night person. So I was having issues with that. And then second, I've never followed rules well. And firefighting and paramedic, it's a paramilitary sort of career, right?
Absolutely. Hierarchy, rules, policies, yep.
And I was actually the supervisor of the base, but I still had to report to and so I was part of a helicopter service, which was very, they had the captains, lieutenants, like that was very military based.
Sure.
And then I also had my base hospital report to. So even though I was the boss of the base, I still had a lot of people to report to, all these rules, to all these politics. Anyway, it was frustrating for me. And at that time, there was a lot of work being done in the high tech sector in Ottawa. And I have a master's degree in business management, and I'd done work with Colorado Outward Bound, well, in Leadville, Colorado. And I wanted to do an outdoor experiential education business here in Ottawa for the high tech sector.
Very
and
cool.
And so I'd started that. It was going actually quite well. And one of the things that we did on our training was a rappelling session. And I was running really late one day. Well, it was a 2-day thing. And on the second day I was running late. So I made sure that I raced out to the rappel site before my clients got there, so that I could set all the ropes before they got there. Because if the clients are there, then I have to follow these like crazy safety things. And if they're not there, I could bypass all the safety stuff. So I bypassed the safety stuff. And this is why you say make the jump into entrepreneurship. It's because while I was on the top of the cliff, my foot got stuck in between two rocks. I twisted funny and I almost launched head first over a 35-foot cliff.
Oh,
and
wow.
Instead of doing that, I actually jumped off the cliff. So I jumped 35 feet down. And when I landed, I broke my arm and my leg and my back.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And my dog woke me up. I had my two dogs with me. They woke me up. I had to hike out about half a mile to this is at my cottage. And so I forget if she was my girlfriend or my fiance back then. I woke her up, ambulance came. I had surgery later that day, but because of the broken back, I wasn't allowed to work on the ambulance for quite some time. And that gave me the push I needed to really, because I was healthy before I was healthy enough to work. So that gave me the push I needed to sell my house, sell my cottage, buy this abandoned sawmill, 164 acres, and just go all in to become an entrepreneur.
Wow. Okay. So that is not a normal first step into entrepreneurship.
No.
That's a first falling leap into, what do they say that in Toy Story, right? That wasn't flying. It was falling with style. That's how you got into it. So you were dabbling into a business. You started what sounds like a pretty cool business with a corporate,
yeah,
trip, but you weren't all in. You still had the day job. You, yeah, still had the thing. So that got you all in. How did you move from running businesses or from doing that business into becoming the marketing medic and not just the outdoor retreat medic?
Yeah. So I retired as a firefighter paramedic. Cause like I said, I sold my house. I sold my cottage. I moved out into the woods. And what I didn't take into consideration is that we didn't have a phone or electricity or anything here. So I was just going to go back to work part-time, but they couldn't call me because I didn't have a phone. So, I didn't really have much of a choice. I just went all in. It was like sink or swim. And so I kept going with the team building stuff. But the thing is like in the 1998, 1999, that's when the high tech sector started to really collapse, right?
Sure,
we had hotel networks here that employed like a third of Ottawa, and it just disappeared overnight. And that was like my big client. And then I did pretty well with the government for a little while. But as an entrepreneur, you have to look for opportunities. And our second or third year here, my fiance, my wife, whatever she was, we got married here at my home. And at the end, after the wedding, everybody was leaving. It's like, you know what? This is the best wedding we've ever been to.
Right.
So like, you know what? As an entrepreneur, I see an opportunity there. I was like, you know what? And they weren't just saying that. Like, they literally thought this wedding. It's like, you know what? If I could create a best wedding for us, I could create a best wedding for other people.
Right.
And that's actually an easier market. And this is something to think of as an entrepreneur. What I was trying to do with my corporate team building is I had a really elaborate system where I was taking outdoor experiential education. I was transferring the lessons from there back into the office.
Right.
And it sounds good in practice, but most managers don't understand that. They want to go golfing. They want to go whitewater rafting. They want to go play laser tag. They want to have fun.
Yeah.
And I had to educate them between the difference between team bonding and team building.
Yes, there is a difference,
There is a difference, and it was tough for them they were trying to decide whether they should go golfing or whether they should have a boardroom lecture. And what I was doing was I was combining the two. I was creating a whole new vertical that they weren't experienced in, and so I had to do a lot of education. And so I'm not saying you can't do it, but it's a steeper curve to get clients.
Yeah, it's one of the things I talk about here on the show a lot is, as fun as Blue Ocean Strategy is, right? As fun as it is to be the only thing there, I'm a big believer in what I call Pink Ocean, which is you want to go where there's not massive competition, but where there's at least some awareness of what something is, right? And so you were out in Blue Ocean where you had to not only, you created a product that was unique, but you had to do so much pre-education to get people to understand the product that maybe it just couldn't scale or sustain as fast. But then sounds like you found something that had a little bit more. Everyone knows a place to get married, right?
And so, when you have a beautiful location with complete freedom and a lack of rules, because most wedding venues, they just have like rule after rule after rule after rule.
Right.
And so what I've done is I've created one rule, leave the place like you found it. That's it. And then it's your wedding, your way, whatever I can do to make your dream possible. And so brides, I didn't have to go and educate them. They were looking for me. They're like, finally, we finally found a place that will allow us to bring in our own wine. Like, nobody else lets us do that.
Right.
So I found what people were looking for, then I provided it.
I love that as your core rule, because it's basically like, look, don't ruin the place, but it's your place, it's your canvas to build what you want to build. How much of those services did you provide, or were you venue only? They had to bring in everything, or if they wanted your help, did you provide those other pieces?
Yeah, so we provide like the seating and the tables and the outdoor seating. I became a licensed minister so I could officiate the wedding. I've got my bartending certificate, so sometimes I would attend bar. We provide the audio system. So basically, they need us and they need a caterer. We didn't want to get involved with food, and we also didn't want to get involved with liquor, because I'm not insured for liquor. They get their own, it's called a reunion permit. So I have nothing to do with the liquor. If anything happens, I'm not liable at all. And so I don't have to have the insurance. I don't have the responsibility. Nice. And that's where they get to save the most money, right? Because most wedding places, they're selling, $7-$8 bottles of wine for like $40.
Yep, absolutely.
Here, you can bring your own $7 bottle of wine, open them up all you want, and that's all it's going to cost you.
Awesome. Okay, so here we go through our journey. We've got falling off of a cliff to starting a first business and then really expanding it, right, from into a couple of things. But, I know you a little bit, but the world doesn't always know. Like, you've then done races and other things on the property as well. And so is it through marketing, is it through learning to grow your own businesses that you became really a marketing specialist?
Yeah, I think so. And this is like one of the things that I usually talk about on these shows is that it's the strategy behind a funnel that works. And the most important part of your strategy is your offer.
Right.
And so that's kind of what I learned from the beginning. You know, I was offering this thing to my team building clients that they'd never heard of.
Right.
So people weren't snapping at it. Right. But when I offered a venue where you could have a blank canvas, that was my offer, then the brides were just, you know, came crushing in.
Yeah.
And then I saw that, you know, I've always been an outdoors guy, and I would see these big walls of cross-country skis, and then I would see less skis and more snowshoes, less skis and more snowshoes. I'm just seeing all these snowshoes showing up on the wall. And I was like, there's no snowshoe racing. Why isn't there? So I created the Mad Trapper Snowshoe Series. I'm the first snowshoe race series in Canada.
Awesome.
And it was the same thing. There's people who love to run, people love to do triathlons, and then there's just the people who like to get outdoors and do stuff with their family in the snow. So now I've created an event, and it's an event. It's more so than a race, again, because it's what people are looking for.
Right.
Think about most races. It's funny because they always promote, you know, there's a $10,000 first prize for the winner.
Right.
When you got a race of like 400 people, how many people have an honest shot at that $10,000 prize?
Yeah, you know? And most people know that they're, whether or not they're a competitive level. So it's like one, yeah. You know, you got one to less than 1% that are thinking that it's a race. To everyone else, it's, you know, a goal they set or a journey or, exactly. Or an obstacle just to achieve.
But from a marketing perspective, so many of the racers, like they flaunt these great big, you know, first prize is $10,000, second prize is $5,000, third prize, yep. $20,000. And like you say, there's less than 1% of the field has a chance of winning that. So right. With my races, the winners get announced and then usually ridiculed. And, and then all the prizes we have are all random, 100% yeah. Random. So everybody gets a chance to win. And then we also focus on our post-race experience so that, excuse me, we have like a big meal with lasagna or chili or some sort of casserole. Yeah. And people don't want to leave after the race. They stay around. They get to hang out, eat food with the winners who are, you know, they're minor celebrities in that area.
Sure.
And it's like I say, so I've created more of, it's a race, but I focus on the event and I focus on the majority of the population in the event that for what they want.
Yeah.
Like you said, they're just there to finish the race. It's crazy. I've seen like 5K racers finish in well over an hour. And I'm like, when I set the course, I'm putting the flags in and I'm walking, I do it faster than that. Like, so how are you racing? But it doesn't matter what I think. Like, geez, this is the mentality of your audience. And you have to think, what do they want? They want to come out. They want to say they finished a Mad Trapper, you know?
Yeah.
That's like a feather in their hat.
And yeah, and for a lot of people, they need that. They need that, just the fact that to say they've done it. And really, you know, you're building a community, or as in the current terminology, the culture, where people have that something to belong to, which is huge. Yep. We do that. We've done kind of a similar thing when we used to run CrossFit style competitions down here in California. And the events that would focus on the top athletes, they always thought that would bring people in. But what brings people in is the local mom, it's her first competition ever. That brings the big group, because that's the fans that want to watch their friend and their mom and their colleague do something that they never thought possible.
That's right.
And you know, you mentioned strategy, and I think my big aha moment in marketing some of my products came in when someone first told me, I kept thinking I needed to find new sources of traffic. I got it, man. If I only had Google allowing me to advertise this again, or if I only had this, and someone finally said, they're like, you don't have a traffic problem. You have an offer problem. Because if your offer is not converting on multiple types of traffic, then it's not refined enough yet. And that means the strategy is not in place. And it's really changed everything on how I approach new product launches and approach current products that maybe aren't, you know, excelling. Is if the market's there, if there's traffic coming and they're not biting, like you said, something's off. It's not being communicated. It's not the quality of the traffic. It's the quality of the offer. How do you take that now, you know, when strategy being this important, how has that changed kind of how you work with your current things that you're doing or products or clients that come in to work with you?
Well, working with clients, the first thing I do, and it's crazy, and you've probably experienced this working with your clients, I always want to identify who your client avatar is.
Right.
And they're like, you know what? Our product is so good. It's good for women, two men, age like 18 to 65.
Right.
It's not good I was like, no, that's not true. That's not true. Like, show me how many 18-year-olds have bought your product. Well, none have bought it, but they could. Like, if they did, work for them. I'm like, I'm sure it would. But the thing is they're not buying it, right? Yeah. And so let's narrow it down. And it's more than, and so what a lot of people do when they're teaching about client demographics is they stick to the demographics. They stick to like the age, where they live, where they work. But you need to go deeper than that. You need to go into what are their pain points, like what are their internal and external pain points that you can address, and how can you craft an offer that will meet their pain points?
Right.
And what a lot of my clients do is they've created stuff in the past, right? And they're so proud of it. And they're like, yeah, I created this a couple years ago. I want to give this away.
Right.
Now you're trying to make your client avatar match your offer, but you can't do it that way. You got to look at what your client wants and then craft your offer to that.
And adjust it. That makes sense.
And then it goes one step further. When you create that offer, then you're like, yeah, this is the perfect offer. Then you have to ask yourself, are 100% of my people that I expose this to going to take it? And you're going to say no. And then you have to start asking yourself, if my offer is that good, why not? Like, why are they rejecting it? And then you have to look at your offer again and see, is like, yeah, the core of this offer is really good. Like for me, I teach people how to build funnels, right? So that's a really good thing. But what good's a funnel if you don't have traffic?
Yeah.
And so if I want a complete offer, then I have to say, you know what, I've got this amazing product where I teach you how to build a funnel with all the strategy and all the mechanics. But I also, I've just sort of done this lately through my own learning experience. I also have a module on how to drive traffic. This isn't a full-on traffic course, but it's basic enough so you get your first people coming through your door.
Right.
And yeah, I can also show you.
Once you think you have an offer, once you think you have it crafted, then you have to at least get enough traffic there to see if it's working.
Yeah, so I'm not going like deep into the third level pixel and like the retargeting and all that stuff. Like, that's another course, but you don't need that until you get the base traffic. So I can do like one module that just helps that person with the rejections. Like, yeah, I know you can help me build a great funnel, but what good is that if I don't know how to drive anybody to it?
Right.
So I'm like, listen, I've got a module that covers that. And then I've also introduced a module on how to get your first client. Because, and this is the whole, like, when we were kids, right? You needed experience to get a job, but you needed a job to get experience.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as an entrepreneur. The most valuable thing you could have as an entrepreneur is a testimonial. Is that, look it, it's worked. A third party endorses what I'm doing.
Right.
But how do you get that third party endorsement, right? If you're nobody to start with.
Right.
And so this is just from my own personal experience that, when I looked at why isn't everybody taking me up on my offer, it's like, oh, because these pieces were missing. I wasn't providing the complete package.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So strategy being, I think I'm in complete agreement. I think, sometimes we see on Facebook or in some of the groups that we're both a member of, people saying, does anybody have a funnel that works for X? And it's probably one of the things that just irritates me the most, because I'm like, well, what is your offer? What are the products that you're doing? Because if it's at all different than somebody else's funnel, then the funnel becomes irrelevant. The funnel is the tool to deliver the strategy or implement the strategy. And there's so much shoehorning happening, right? Where it's like, well, I'll just change my offer to be whatever they did. And it's like, well, their avatar is different. Their product is different. Their price points are different. Everything changes. And that kind of brings up the next topic we were going to talk about, which is comparing two different things, two different offers or two different entrepreneurs or two different places in somebody's journey, and how you have to really understand that you are where you are and that you need to be operating from that place, right? And moving forward. Talk to me a little bit about how you see comparison, really just slowing people down or setting them up for false hope.
Yeah. And we got to keep in mind like what marketing is, marketing, right? And you want to do it as ethically as possible. I think a lot of marketers are very ethical.
Yeah.
But there's you can be ethical and also mislead.
Yes.
If that makes sense, right? So, like, I'm a really good example of that. You probably know I helped Rachel Miller. Rachel is this Facebook guru, and she's given me all this credit because on her first launch, in 4 days, she made $93,000. She's like, Mike did this. Like, Mike helped me craft my offer and do all this stuff. Because of Mike, I made $93,000 in 4 days. And that's a partial truth. Like, Rachel has this blog with, I forget her numbers now, but she had like millions of people coming to her blog, and she was making decent money from her ads, from her Google ads on her blog. And I was like, you know what? Like, you're making tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars for the people who are advertising on your blog. Why don't you make that money for yourself? Why don't you have your own product?
Right.
She's like, well, I don't have anything to sell. And I'm like, people want traffic. So anyway, I helped her get to her product, to get to her offer. Okay. And so, yes, because of me, I helped her with that. But I could help, you know, somebody who doesn't have a blog come up with a great idea. But if they don't have a million people that are visiting their website every month,
yeah,
then I could do exactly what I did for Rachel, for somebody who's just starting in the game, and they're not going to get Rachel's results.
Right.
Because Rachel had done the work before to build her tribe, to build her cult. And they were all just waiting for Rachel to sell her own thing. She didn't know it. I knew it. She didn't know it. And so all she had to do was like put out her placard, and it went like crazy.
Right. Yeah. And basically then it's very easy from an entrepreneur and someone getting started to hear Rachel's story and be like, I'm going to do what Rachel did, and therefore I'm going to make $93,000 in my launch. But the whole part, which is what you're talking about now, is that she's coming from her current positioning of having an audience already.
Right.
If you're missing a piece of the marketing mix, then you can't expect the results to duplicate. And it works also in an upward position too, right? Somebody could, you know, what worked for Rachel with her million visitors could exponentially be more for someone that has more, you know, 10 million visitors.
Right.
But it also means if your blog only has 10 visitors a month,
right,
you're probably not going to see the same impact.
But as a marketer, I am ethically going to, I've got it on my website, you know, Rachel's Facebook endorsement. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mike Caldwell. Yeah. You know, you did this for, because I did.
Yes.
You know, she wouldn't have done it without me, but she also wouldn't have done it without the work legwork she put in before.
Right.
Like another example, and this is where what ClickFunnels has done. ClickFunnels has made it so easy to build a functional working funnel, right? And one of Russell's things is, you know, sign up for ClickFunnels and I will give you my funnel that was making $17,475 a day.
Right.
So basically what you're saying is you're going to give me a funnel that makes $17,000 a day. That is so cool. And all I have to do is pay $97 a month for
and all I have to do is add in my images and my copy, and I'm going to have the same results. And that's the implication of that is there, right?
Yeah. And the thing is Russell, again, he's being ethical. That funnel that he built is making $17,000 a day. It's a supplement funnel, and he's investing over $15,000 a day in ads.
Right.
So that is it's a profitable funnel, 10 to 15% profitable, which, you know, for supplements is really good. So it's not a bad funnel by any means, but if you want to, so even like with taking away all the things that you said, even if you had all the resources that Russell had, you had all the right images, the right product and all that other stuff, you would still have to have 15 grand a day to put down to make 17. And of course,
and have gone through the learning curve of finding where the right traffic and what to add. I mean, cause that's a big part that gets missed, right? Is like, on Russell's funnel, they spent months finding what kind of ads worked, what kind of pre-framing needed to happen for the people to actually convert once they landed there.
Yep.
I agree. I think the challenge, the hope that ClickFunnels has delivered to the market, I think is amazing. It is very easy to build a funnel, but the number of people that start that sign up for ClickFunnels and then they'll post out there, okay, I've got ClickFunnels. Now what should I sell? And I'm like, holy cow, like, I love that they're taking that jump so much. And there are a lot of things they can start with as an affiliate or other things, but it really takes out the fact that it's like buying all your tools to build a house, but then not knowing if what you want to build. Like, okay, I have a tool chest, now what? It's like, well, maybe you should have gone and got the architectural plans or bought a lot or done whatever you needed to do first and then acquire the tools needed to build. And Seth Godin told me once, he said, it's not about, a lot of people say, I want to be successful doing this. Like, I'm a X, how do I be successful? He said, what they should say is, I want to be successful, what should I do? And basically take out everything they have currently, because sometimes we have to cast off our existing experiences, right? Kind of like you had to, you basically were willing to move on from the corporate training because you saw it wasn't, what else can I do? You didn't want to just keep hammering in, how do I become successful at that?
Sorry, I got a dog that's smashing at the door.
Yeah, so I think sometimes it's, you've got to be willing to cast off what you brought in and say, okay, if I want to be successful, what do I start from today? What do I have? What resources do I have? What will make sense? What won't make sense? And what is the goal?
Yeah, and that's another big part of becoming an entrepreneur is doing your research up front, finding out if there is a market for your services and finding out what the competition is. I had an HVAC client and he's not HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning.
Yeah.
And he helps HVAC organizations rank on Google. Uh-huh. So that's, he was doing the SEO stuff. And then he wanted to start getting leads for them. And he was telling me how he had all his experience in HVAC. He knew all the stuff and he wanted me to build him a funnel. So I'm like, this guy knows everything about HVAC. He's my resource. I can just go from there.
Yep.
And so he created this amazing PDF on how to like interview your HVAC contractor to make sure you don't get ripped off, to make sure, you don't go through all those contractor horror stories.
Right.
And the thing was, is so we built him a great funnel. I thought it was awesome, but we weren't getting any leads. And so then I started to do my own research and I started to look at what the other HVAC providers were doing. One was giving, a free central air conditioner with a purchase of a furnace, right? Another was like a free year of maintenance.
Right.
Those are their lead magnets. So how can you compete against, like, you've got this like whatever $4,000 air conditioning versus a 9-page document?
Yeah, here, I'll give you a PDF. They'll give you a piece of equipment.
Yeah, and it was kind of, so he was a little bit mad at me because my funnel wasn't working. And so I said, well, let me find out why. And I did the research. He's like, well, I'm not as big as those guys. Like, we can't give away stuff like that.
Yep.
I was like, well, the reality is like, we can't dress up this PDF. And it's a 9-page warning label is what it is. Like,
yeah, I agree. I think sometimes people want what they have to work, but it doesn't mean the market wants it to work. And that's always been my big thing as a marketer, is trying to realize what I think is great, the market may totally disagree with. And opinions really just don't matter in business, right? And so many times I'll be having a conversation with them and they'll say something like, oh, I really think this is going to work. And they get passionate about it. I'm like, be passionate about the opportunity, but recognize the market may just completely disagree with you and don't have your feelings hurt. Just be willing to come up with the next thing. I'm sure you've had this experience too, where you talk with someone and they have an idea. And then a year later you talk with someone, they have the same idea. And then you see them at another event a year later and they're still talking about that same idea. I'm like, if you haven't tested that out and either proven it to be true or proven it to be false, that's now 3 years that you're just spinning wheels.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, test it. Find out if the market likes it and then be willing to move on or be willing to scale up.
I used to do an off-road triathlon here. So I've got a lake in the back of the property, so we'd all have to hike back into the lake and then we'd swim back there, then we'd mountain bike and then we'd trail run. And I had like 3 or 4 people like, dude, not everybody can swim. And so because it's a short race, they don't want to wear a wetsuit. So if you did a duathlon where it was like a run, bike, run, oh, that'd be so much better, right? And so I'm like, okay. So the next year I go to all this work, create another secondary run course for the run, and zero people came. And like the 3 or 4 people who told me about it, I'm like, where were you guys? Like, oh no, I didn't want to do it. I just thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. And there's a lot of times, theoretical objections, right? I hear it all the time. Oh, people won't want to do that. It's like, well, let's ask the people, if the people want to do that. And, that was worth testing. It may have been huge, but the market responded. And now what we have to do as marketers is be willing to move on from the things that don't work.
Right.
I think that's what's hard. And I think that's what separates the self-employed person from the entrepreneur. is a self-employed person is really, they're just running their company. They're probably like someone like an HVAC guy or a service-based guy, and they don't understand that they have to pivot and adjust. They're just going to keep hammering down on what they do. The entrepreneur recognizes, man, I'm going to try a strategy. If it doesn't work, I'm moving on. I'm not going to marry my emotions and my business to one idea, one strategy.
Yeah. And that's what I've been with Russell for about 3 years now. And I keep thinking, oh man, like he can't do anything else. Like that's it. Like what's he going to do next? And then when we go to Funnel Hacking Live last week, he's got these new programs. Like I say, now you can be a fly on the wall for how he's going to launch this book. He's charging $10,000 for that. He just pulled that out of thin air. And you can have so many people jumping on that. And so when you're talking about, like, Russell could just be self-employed, like you said. He could just become the CEO of ClickFunnels.
Right.
And just run the ClickFunnels business, and he would crush it. There's nothing wrong with that on its own. That, so many of us would love to own a business.
Oh, like, yeah. Sure.
But that's not his thing. He doesn't want to be self-employed. He wants to always be like, he's a creative guy. And so where he could just ride ClickFunnels, he's every, like, 2 years ago, ClickFunnels certification, that was the big thing. It was so huge. I'm like, you know what? I don't see that lasting, because the big selling part of that is the marketplace.
Right.
And once you get like 500 ClickFunnels people certified in the marketplace, then
value.
So, oh man, what's he going to do after that? Russell's like, ugh. What do you mean? I got like 50 ideas that are going to replace that one.
And you know, he is one of the best I've ever seen at following his own advice and really like living. So he's built this amazing community. And I think, you know, him and his team now just listen to what the community wants. And people are telling him, man, I wish I could just be a fly on the wall. I wish I could just see what you guys are doing. And he recognized, man, I can't do that. That doesn't scale if I'm just now like, you know, I mean, the Inner Circle program, those other programs that he does, there's caps to those.
Yeah.
But if it's just basically like, oh, you can pay to have insider access, and man, that's pretty, it was a pretty clever opportunity that he did. And it's fun to see how often they come out with new things, and that he maintains that creative outlet. You know, it's pretty cool.
And as entrepreneurs too, like we have to, again, going back to what your audience is thinking, right? And you and I, we want to make money. Like that's one of our main motivators, because we're entrepreneurs, business owners.
Yep.
So we think that's what everybody wants. But when I was helping Rachel with her thing, with her bloggers, they don't want to monetize. They just want people to read their stuff. They just want people to know their name. They just want people to use their recipes. Like they really don't care if they make any money at all.
Right.
And I'm not saying this is the same for Russell's tribe, but a lot of those people, they just want to touch Russell. Like,
yeah, no, I think they, you're right. I think they're at, most of the people that are willing to pay that much already know the basics. They're already making money. They're already profitable. They're already doing, because they have $10,000 to throw down on a bonus product, right?
Yeah.
But they also recognize, man, I just want to be a part of it. I just want to be, you know, be that much to the icon that is Russell Brunson. But go ahead.
Oh no, just because this is super important. This is what Russell talks about. Russell's always got his thing that he's so passionate about, and he keeps changing. Not that he just gets new things.
Sure.
But when I first started with Russell, he was all about the Dream 100 and coming up with those people that can influence the influencers, right?
Right.
And one of the things that's helped me so much with my career is I'm like, all right, Russell, Dream 100, guess who's at the top of that list? And so I have like a professionally shot video of Russell Brunson doing a testimonial for me. That's because I targeted him as one of my Dream 100. I also, and then I'm like, you know what? Todd Brown, he's the next dude. So I have a testimonial video from Todd Brown. It's because I provided value to each of those individuals. And so for these guys that are spending the $10,000 to be a fly on the wall for his book launch, if they play that right and don't just, you know, try to get stuff from Russell, if they try to give and, you know, help him whatever way they can, or just do whatever he needs. And we all need our ego buffed. I don't care who you are, right? Sure. Even if it's as minimal as that, like that's where that $10,000 can come in. It's just so funny that like people just don't want to do the work. And that Dream 100, Russell says Dream 100 is what has made his business. and the Dream 100, which in my case is like the Dream 15,
right,
has done what, like, I know even like when you and I met, like, I was so excited to meet you. You're excited to meet me. And since then, we've both helped one another out, right?
Absolutely.
It's all about forming those, like, you're in my Dream 100. It's all about forming those relationships.
And yeah. So,
again, it seems like a lot of work. And, like, when I sent Russell, like, a little baby jumper when his daughter was born, that didn't pay off the next day, right?
Right.
He didn't even send me a thank you letter for that, which I'm not expecting. But
no, I get it.
I'm sure you got a ton of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But stuff like that doesn't pay off right away.
Yeah.
But over the long term, it pays off in such, you know, exponentially. It's just incredible.
So. I think you hit on something right now that was going to get lost on some people. And it's that the biggest thing that I heard from what you just said is that you hired a mentor who gave you advice and you actually followed it, right? Like, so many people will read a book, they'll read .com secrets, or they'll read something and then they put it away and then they go back to doing what they used to do. And then they're like, I had a conversation with this one guy a long time ago about the 4-hour work week. And he's like, I read that book, it doesn't work. And I go, did you do any of the homework assignments? No. Did you actually like test a Muse? Nope. I'm like, the book is an inanimate object. It's not designed to work. You're the one that's supposed to work. It's knowledge, right? And so how you went out and actually applied that, to me, seems to be one of your biggest strengths that I think some people miss, is that you execute and you make it work, but then you're also willing to pivot and make adjustments.
That happened today. So we were talking earlier and I told you that Todd Brown has referred a client to me. So what happened is I sat in on a full day coaching session with Todd, the client, and he wanted me to build it out afterwards. And so David said, Mike, all we need to know is that you will put into place what Todd laid out.
Right.
And I told him, like, do you know why Todd is talking, has referred me now? Because from the beginning, if Todd said do it, I did it.
Right.
And that's how I got to be, you know, Todd's number one referral right now.
Right.
It's me, because Todd's like, yeah, I've taught the big idea. I've taught the unique mechanism to hundreds, thousands of people. Mike, the guy who just gets it and does it and just stays consistent with it.
Absolutely. And
it kind of goes back to like dieting. How many diets are out there right now? And I honestly believe that every diet in the market works.
Yeah.
You just have to do it. Just stick with it.
Yeah.
One diet's better, probably better, a little bit better for somebody else than another person. But I don't care what it is. If you stick to that diet, you'll get the results.
Yeah, no diet outperforms 4 sleeves of Oreos a night, right? So here's my big thing that I ask everyone that comes on the show most of the time. I guess I've forgotten a couple times, but we do business so that we can live our lives, right? The business, as much as for many of us, the business is fun and it's our hobby, it also, we do business as an entrepreneur so we have a lifestyle. What is one major thing on your bucket list that you're going to do here in the next 12 months that you've, what's one big Mike Caldwell item that's going to happen?
I've been building funnels for a few years now, and I find it very stressful because every client I work with, I need to get them results because they've invested their money, they've invested their trust in me, and I take that's a heavy weight on my shoulders.
Yeah.
And it's a weight that I just, it's too stressful. I've accepted that weight my whole life. Like, as a firefighter, as a paramedic, if I screwed up, people were going to literally die.
Right.
So I've always had that stress. And now I'm not responsible for people's physical lives. I'm responsible for their business lives. And it's just like more stress. And so what I'm doing now is I've partnered with two different businesses. And now I'm a 50% partner in both those businesses. And I want to take the skills that I've learned through marketing. And these are big scale businesses. And I want to apply what I've learned to helping other people. Now if I fail, I'm failing my partner, but I'm only failing one person as opposed to when you have an agency, there's all these other people. And when you have a partner and they see you working, they know that if I fail, I'm going to lose money as well as them.
Yeah.
If you hire me, you like, what skin do I have in the game?
Of course, right. You're like, oh, well, you're not going to hire me again. But
yeah, but when I've got skin, so, and I think all my clients know I'm working as hard as I can for them. Like that HVAC guy, like I was doing the best I can, but I can't make a PDF compete with a $4,000 air conditioner, right? But I still feel responsible for that. I'm like, how can I get this guy the results that he needs? Right. And so the big thing that I want to do is I really want to take those two partners that I'm working with now, and I want to like just bring those two businesses into the next level.
So your big pivot this year and your big kind of shift in what you're doing is you're going back from being the entrepreneur who is a consultant as an entrepreneur to the entrepreneur who's back to building your core business and building for you and a partner, which is great. I think strategic partnerships can be phenomenal. Well, that's awesome. I wish you obviously nothing but success. We'll be hearing more from you. And want to thank you for coming out here on Biz Ninja Radio. People can listen on ABC News Radio here in Southern California or at bizninja.com/radio. And Mike, if people can find you at marketingmedic.ca, is that right?
That is correct.
Awesome. You can always find either of us on the Facebook. We exist out there in the interwebs. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Now go out and do something.
Thank you for listening to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with Tyler Jorgensen. Please make sure to subscribe so you're first to hear new interviews and episodes. If you found this podcast to be valuable, please share it with a friend. Don't forget to visit our online dojo at bizninja.com to claim your reward for listening to the show.